Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to the Nile or Nine podcast. This is the second edition of our Best of 2023 episodes, the trilogy. We are halfway through the trilogy. This is our Two Towers. This is our two towers. Hello.
Yes. Our Empire Strikes Back.
The best one. The best one. Yeah.
Yeah. Our Back to the Future 2. Our Toy Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
I mean, it's...
Toy Story 2.
It's Terminator we're setting 2. Ourselves up well here. We've no pressure at all whatsoever, but there is no pressure because we have plenty of our favorite albums of the year to talk about. The voices you can hear is myself, Niall Byrne, aka 909, and Andrea Cleary, aka Andrea Cleary.
Dr. Dre.
Working on it. How are you? We had a nice night last night in the big romance in real life, IRL.
We had a lovely night. Lovely night last night in the big romance, listening to Sufjan Stevens, Illinois, with a lovely group of people, some of whom are there from the Discord. So hello to those people in particular. It was lovely. I was catching up with Maria about all the what I missed in the Beyonce film.
You've not gone.
So I've not gone yet. No. So she was filling me in and recommending that I do see it. So yeah, and we were catching up on some other folks about our Spotify Wrapped and everything, and some of my pals came down. It was lovely. It was just such a lovely night. I love the big romance. I love that room. I love that space. And I was surprised that there wasn't, maybe the other part of the bar wasn't as busy this time as it was last time, but there was a lot less sort of like noise bleed coming in, and you could actually hear, because I was worried with some of the like the quieter, more acoustic songs. I was like, oh, I don't know how this is going to work on the sound system. You know, it's like, are we going to have to really crank it up? But no, it worked really well.
It was beautiful. Because I couldn't turn it up anymore than it was.
So
we did well there, I think. But lovely, really nice. Well, listen closely. Parties that we are doing with the Big Romance are kind of just nice listening events. Michael, who came down last night, described it as very ritualistic, like music church, which is nice. So,
that's lovely.
It is. I mean, it's once you, like you were saying to the audience last night, once you get past the "where do I look" kind of idea, you just kind of sink into it and listen. And I think
I'm thinking for the next one, I might bring my knitting with me. I might encourage people if they have a craft, like bring it along. If you want to do some coloring, absolutely get involved, you know. So I think I
might be the first person in history to knit along to Mad Villain. Mad villainy.
I might well be.
So that'll be January 31st. Yeah. Going forward, these listen closely parties, I can't say that today, are happening on the last Wednesday of every month. So you can find us there. So that'll be a lot of fun. So Mad Villainy is the next one. So that'll be on sale in January as well. We've about, I think 45 tickets is probably the max we can sell. So yeah, they're limited fun little events. So thanks for coming down and look out for more of those.
Yeah.
So well, last week we did songs of the year, and this week we are going to do albums of the year. So Andrea, in the scheme of what we've been doing in the podcast every year with the best of, I mean, how do we think 2023 stacked up in terms of albums overall this year?
I'm often resistant to saying whether or not a year was like good for albums or bad for albums, because oftentimes you need a bit of time to let albums ruminate, and you need more than, even if something came out like early in the year, you kind of need more than a year to know whether it's going to hit for a long time. But it's hard to know, but I don't think we have like, you know, a classic album from this year.
I think that's maybe fair. That's been my perspective as well.
But I'm open to having I've by no means listened to every album that's been released this year or every album that is on, you know, the various lists that I've seen around the place. So I'm open to that changing. But I do think we got a few albums from artists that could very well be fans of those artists' favorite albums of theirs. Do you know what I mean? I'm thinking of like Olivia Rodrigo's second album. I'm thinking of SZA. I'm thinking of who else? Mitski. I think that album has like longevity written all over it, you know, even though I think it flew under the radar a little bit this year. So like there are a few albums that I think will stand the test of time. Maybe the Boy Genius album might be one that really stands the test of time. But yeah, it's hard to know at this stage. What about you? How do you feel about the album offerings this year?
I would agree with that.
Sorry. Lancome, I think, will also stand the test of time, and perhaps the Oxen record as well, but in terms of Irish albums. Yeah. But yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, on a wider like international, there's no real major consensus in terms of albums, I don't think, this year. And interestingly, the Lancome album certainly has a consensus internationally as well about being so good. But other than that, yeah, it's been a year of good albums as opposed to great albums. And
as opposed to one great album, one kind of obvious, you know, like when you click into the various lists, like when I clicked into the Pitchfork list, I had no idea who they'd put at number one. I would have guessed that they would have put Olivia Rodrigo at number one, but they didn't.
Who did they put in?
I think they had SZA at number one, did they?
SZA, yeah, that's right, because that came out in December last year.
Yeah.
Which is the eternal struggle for a musical review. Like anything that comes out in December is hard to count, so you just kind of have to. And this year,
it's next year's problem.
Yeah, this year I've been much better. I've been like, oh, look, December's just 2024 because I just can't take in all that stuff as I mentioned. Just become a dad. There's no way I'll have time to listen to new albums this month, as well as the end of year stuff and all. And though that there has been like, there's a couple of things I want to listen to properly, like the Peter Gabriel album, which I have a fair idea of because he has released a lot of them in advance. And I don't know if there's been any other major album releases in this month, but it is a really tough month to release an album.
Well, there's allegedly going to be a Kanye album tomorrow, so I don't know.
Oh, God.
I know.
Ah, we were doing so well. I don't need that.
I know.
But yeah, but
I only
it.
Know
this,
this because all the Taylor Swift fans on TikTok are awaiting their reputation announcement for the re-record of that, and there's a lot of predictions that she'll either announce it or release it on the day of Kanye's album release. So that's the only way I know about it is through the Swifties.
There's always things that are bound to be released in December, but we're going to focus on things that are released from January onwards. And I guess there's a mixed bag in terms of genres as usual from me. And will I kick it off and just talk about a really nice album? You know, I think every year there's these albums that are not big marquee records that, you know, make a big impression on you, but also are kind of quiet background albums. So mm-hmm. I have a fair few of those this year, I would say. There's a lot of background and nice listening as opposed to active listening, so a bit passive stuff. Really lovely, really mood setting. So the first one I have is from Rosie Plain, a Bristol singer-songwriter who plays with This Is The Kit. That's what how I would have known her originally. Has a solo album called Prize from this year. And it's a really lovely collection of kind of English folk music with a lot of like psych kind of softer, dreamy, poppy kind of arrangements. I'm going to play a song from it called Agreeing for Two to give the best flavor. I think this is the opening track, but it's probably the best song on the record as well. So here is what that sounds like.
What should we call it?
So Prize from Rosie Plain was one of those albums that came out in January on Memphis Industries. It wasn't a big, like, let's all talk about this kind of release, but it for fans of that record or fans of Rosie Plain, she has quite a lot of, I think she does well in Ireland because they have toured here a lot. Mm. This Is The Kit and This Is The Kit do quite well as well. But Rosie on her own has really struck out with this album particularly. So it has some of that like softer, dreamy pop stuff, I think, as well. But it's a really nice mood album. Mm. And I find it, I guess it's kind of one of those things where like I have a lot of albums like this year where I'm like, okay, put on that record because it's really nice.
Mm.
And that's maybe that's a linking to what's going on in the world, but also, you know, personal situations of, especially when you have a new baby in the house, you maybe don't want to put like a drum bass on or yeah. anything like that. So, yeah. So that's part of it. So that's my first kind of, yeah, yeah, he'll definitely get there. He's going to be a club rat.
Yeah. Well, he was born sure. to 1 minute to midnight on a Saturday night, right? So,
yeah, 11:59, yeah. just before the door charge kicked in.
Yeah, what a legend.
ready. But yeah. Okay, so what is your first choice that you're going to talk about on this Best Of podcast?
I will say none of these choices are going to come as a surprise to anybody. I think we've spoken about all of these records throughout the year and some of them quite recently. But yeah, my first choice is Olivia Rodrigo's second album, Guts, which I think really exceeded expectations this year. They were already quite high after such a strong debut album with Sour. And with Olivia, I feel like we sort of finally have an artist now whose star I can see rising to the level of Taylor Swift at some stage. You know, she's not there yet. She's by no means there yet. But I can see her, if she plays all her cards right, if she plays the cards right with the next album, like she's got a long, long career ahead of her. And, you know, Taylor Swift has beef with her, if rumors are to be believed as well. So, yeah. And I mean, she's interesting because, I mean, as a former child star, she tackles that in some ways, you know, in a way that we've come to expect. Like, she swears in her lyrics. There's like the word fuck is all over this record. But because of the time we're in now, because pop punk is kind of making a bit of a resurgence, it's no longer the cool thing to do for a former child star to kind of surround themselves with hip hop producers or to appropriate like hip hop music or black music in order to signify something, you know, dangerous about their image, which was definitely an issue with, you know, if you think about people like Miley Cyrus, but even if you think about somebody like Justin Timberlake when he was starting his solo career.
Yeah.
So I think there is still with both Sour and with Guts, there's still a kind of an innocence that you wouldn't necessarily recognize if you were currently a 20-year-old fan of hers. I think that there is the kind of like the petulance of the like the late teens, early 20s, the kinds of expectations you have upon you and about yourself and your life, the feeling that you want to be messy and that you want to make mistakes and you want to sort of, you know, in the age of social media, you want to document those mistakes while you're young and being told what to do and what's best for you. You know, all these tropes that we've heard time and time again in kind of pop punk. And I think, you know, women of any age can identify with those feelings. And that's why Olivia has fans that, like, you know, across the spectrum, certainly within women, but men also really love her as well. And I think for those of us who grew up with pop punk kind of the first time around, being as it was a very male dominated genre, it is kind of, it's interesting to hear, you know, one of the kind of words of the year is like female rage, but it's interesting to hear a kind of a pop sanitized version of female rage, you know, channeled through really excellent pop punk songwriting. And for that to be the way that she kind of differentiates herself from her peers. And I mean, none of this is to say that Olivia Rodrigo is punk, to be clear, but she's, you know, she's at least appropriating an aesthetic that is, you know, a bit more familiar to her. You know, it's believable to me that she grew up as like a Blink-182 fan, for example. You know, she kind of has this, like, she's tapped into a nostalgia of like the kind of songs that like soundtracked teen movies, but kind of coming at them with a more feminine perspective. Because if we remember the teen movies that, you know, Sum 41 were soundtracking back in the day, they weren't exactly kind to the female characters. So there's something about, you know, the storytelling, the image, the kinds of influences she's taking from that I find very interesting as like a new frontier for exploring an emergence into adulthood that doesn't rely on hip hop and therefore won't get you the same sort of criticism as people like Miley Cyrus when she was twerking, or even when the Taylor Swift Shake It Off video, there was a kind of an appropriation of black dancers in that video. There was a Lily Allen thing, there was an Adele thing, like there was a lot of that. So yeah, I think, and you know, besides all that, I mean, that's all just kind of the interesting sort of, you know, cultural stuff that I'm interested in around Olivia Rodrigo's presence. But, you know, in terms of the album itself, it is full of great songs. It's full of great choruses. And I think it's a real breath of fresh air on the pop charts. I don't think there's a bad song on it. It's, for my money, the best pop album of the year by far. And yeah, so the song I've chosen to kind of highlight is, I think, the best song on the album, which is Get Him Back. So much fun.
Trash, cause I miss the way he kisses and the way he made me laugh. Yeah, I pour my little heart out, but as I'm hitting send, I picture all the faces of my disappointed friends, because everyone knew all of the shit that he did.
So, Andrea, can I ask, like, is there, what did Olivia Rodrigo do on to kind of do cement herself a bit more from a flash to pan, maybe? Or like, I mean, she's always had good songs, but is there anything specific on this production and or the way that they approach it that is kind of encapsulates a vision or something, well, to do with?
Interestingly, I mean, I don't think all that much has changed in terms of like the business decision of this album, right? I mean, if you take a song like Vampire, that is the driver's license of this record. If you take something like Get Him Back, maybe, but I mean, there's what's the name of that song that I'm always forgetting? There's sort of like, you can map the first album onto the second album and see that the same kinds of songs are happening here. So I think, and I mean, even aesthetically, you know, both albums are like, she's very, her like signature color is purple, and this album isn't, she's not coming out and telling us, you know, I'm much more mature now, I'm much more, I'm not a little girl anymore. This is still a very kind of like teenage rage album. And that to me is very interesting. I mean, this is in some ways Sour 2.0. And I think that that was the right decision, because I think I mean, first of all, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like we have excellent songs here. But, you know, in terms of it being like a progression for her, I think, you know, if you take the driver's license vampire comparison, you know, they're functionally doing the same thing within the album. But I just think Vampire is the better song. And I think if you do that kind of mapping project one onto the other, you do come out with like the better songs on the second album. But I wouldn't say she's changed things up too much. I envision her third album being a greater leap between these two. But I mean, I think,
yeah, but there's also no rush to
there's
to,
no rush to change. And I mean, and like morph, if she is going to be an artist who stands the test of time and who has, you know, 10, 11, 12 albums in her career, however many albums she envisages herself having in her career, she's really cementing an early sound here, do you know? Yeah. And you don't do that in just one album, you do it over a few albums. And again, if you take the Taylor Swift, you know, trajectory of her career, like she had her eras, you know, and those eras aren't only divided into albums, you know, it's like, you know, her early albums had a very specific style. And I think Olivia Rodrigo is, you know, consciously or not, I don't know, but someone has decided that she is still in this era. And I think that's really good. And I think that, you know, having these two albums, there's going to be a lot of new artists who are going to take these two albums as a blueprint. And once that starts to happen, and once we start to reach saturation on that, time will tell if Olivia can kind of pivot into something else that, you know, remains new and remains interesting and is still very reflective of who she is at a certain time in her life. You know, she can't be singing about, you know, school being hard or first loves forever, but she's young enough now to still be able to kind of capitalize on those kinds of themes and topics being, you know, quite universal for young people, whether you're, you know, like 12 up to like 27 28, you know, that's like the period of time that she's sort of representing here. But yeah, time will tell with Olivia, but I have very high hopes for her, and a lot of those high hopes are based on how impressed I was with how she followed up Sour so strongly with Guts.
Great. Okay, that's Olivia Rodrigo. My next choice is somebody I also feel the same way about in terms of potential. Mm. And so let us unlock her true potential. Her name is Rachel Lavelle and the album is Big Dreams. Let's listen to that song. Let me unlock your true potential. So that's from Big Dreams, Rachel Lavelle. I think this has been one of the finest debut Irish albums anyway, on the list this year. I think you can hear on Big Dreams how this artist is so able to create these magical kind of worlds, very much a rich tapestry inspired by the likes of Kate Bush, Joni Mitchell, a stated influence for sure. You can hear that on some of the stuff. It's kind of off-kilter, orchestral, beautiful, dreamy electronic pop music, but also just really weird and out there.
It's got a bit
well.
Of a bite to it, I think. It's got a sharpness to it. A bit of a bite, a bit of sharpness. Like a yeah. bit, it's something, I think lyrically an undercurrent well. Of something like not quite right. A little bit
yeah,
eerie.
And I think... Yeah, this kind of self-help guidance that goes throughout, offered by the narrative of the Lewis Light Rail announcer, Dearly Brian, it really adds to that daydreamy feeling, like somebody's on the Lewis listening to this album and their inner monologue is being narrated as the album goes. And there's a lot of like
sense
like
that Lou Ferrigno album, the wellness.
Yeah, there's
thing,
a lot of like yearning and wanting to be close and intimacy and close collaborator Ryan Harganen playing sax and stuff as well. So there's a real like creation of this beautiful like world throughout, and then this, it kind of feels quite avant-garde a lot of the time. And but then she ends up talking about seeking solace in a warm bath, a cold pint, the company of somebody else, a chicken fillet roll.
Yeah.
But it is like, it's a yearning to be felt and loved and held. And I think she does that so well. And the lyrics as well. I think there's some really beautiful lyrics on this. I think the opening lyric on the last song, Big Dreams, is one of my favorites. I came for the comedy, I left for the bus. Just a brilliant like opening line for any song. And it's just, there's loads of lines on this album like that. Mm. I love the Night Train is another example. The line, come and fill the vacancy of hope. Here lies the address. Soften in sadness. Come and sing the Orinoco flow. Mm. It's so like grand gesture, like romanticism. I love that kind of idea. And it's set in a modern world. It's like somebody using Hinge or a dating app to like connect with somebody. And, yeah. You know, but rather than being like, what are you at?
Yeah, there's a lot of the kind of like yearning for connection, as you said, but it's through this sort of like fragmented lens of like a modern digital life or a modern capitalist life where
yeah,
you know
exactly
that where you are experiencing art is on the Lewis, on your commute, you know, and it's that sort of like capturing what that mood is. It's kind of like Blade Runner-esque, weirdly, you know. It's that sort of like mixture between like beautiful aesthetics, sort of like sometimes very like neon feeling, like when I listen to this album, I think of like a rainy street with neon signs, you know, and people looking for, you know, connection and love within that. And it's so impressive that she can create that mood through sound without being, you know, too overt about it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of work has gone into that. And, you know, self-produced, self-released and beautiful work. And a beautiful voice as well. And she's been really coming good on her, you know, early promise in terms of singles, Perpetual Parties on this album, but that was her first single like released like 4 years ago, I think. And had sung, like we talked about, Sufjan. First time I saw Rachel, I think, was probably playing with Glasshouse Ensemble performing songs from Sufjan Stevens, and her voice struck me then as it strikes me now. So yeah, Rachel Lavelle, Big Dreams, a beautiful, beautiful album.
Great. My next album that I'm going to discuss is from Lana Del Rey, and this is Let the Light In, featuring friend of the podcast, Father John Misty.
Wake you up at night, quarter to one. I can never stop, wanna have fun. Don't be acting like I'm the kind of girl who can sleep. Cause every time you say you're gonna go, I just smile.
This is an album I kind of can't believe came out this year. It feels It feels like it came out a long, long time ago. It really hit for me initially when I first listened to it, but then I ended up just not going back to it for months, like for most of the year. And it was only then in kind of September, October that I was starting to think about end of year lists that I returned to it. And when I did that, I really realized that, like, I think some of her best songs are on this record. I think it's quite easy for us to take her for granted at this stage, you know, or certainly take her sound for granted. Yeah, yes, exactly. Like to kind of view Lana as, you know, more of an aesthetic in the modern sense, you know, as aesthetic rather than a particular aesthetic, than something that is, you know, actually planned and worked hard for. Like the kind of the atmosphere that she creates within her music is very singular to her. You know, you don't even need to hear her voice to know that there's a Lana Del Rey song being played. And I think it's hard to, you know, to paraphrase Dolly Parton, it's very difficult to sound this effortless. And Lana, she gives the impression that when she goes into a studio, this level of atmosphere, this kind of sound just kind of occurs naturally. It just occurs, you know, when she starts singing. But that's not the case at all. There's a lot of hard work put into kind of creating these moods and these sounds. And it's been a very influential album on other artists as well. And it's an album about fame and image and love, which are, you know, topics that she has explored before. But what I like about her so much is that every time she comes back to those topics, she's doing it with, you know, a new kind of wisdom, depending on, you know, the stage she is in her life. And I think she's at a stage in her life now where she's very comfortable with exploring her own womanhood through music and exploring the kind of the trauma and the pain that is involved with that, but also, you know, grabbing a kind of an ownership over her own womanhood. So yeah, I think There's a Tunnel Under Ocean Boulevard is a definitely a standout record of the year for me.
Great. Not one that I resonated with this year and kind of just surprised by. But I mean, that's the way it happens sometimes. You can't love every record. Mm-hmm. And whatever happened, I just never really got into this one other than A&W. As a song, I was like, this is nice, but that song just surpasses everything else. And therefore, yeah, I just didn't really vibe with the album. And the interludes and stuff as well just didn't kind of try my patience a little bit. Mm. It is quite a long album, isn't it?
It is quite long, 17 yeah.
minutes, yeah. So there's a lot going on there. So maybe that's part of it. Just time is a factor in that regard. So my next choice is a album. It's probably the hipster's choice, to be honest. And I don't know about even including this. I know, I hummed and hawed about including it, but I was like, when it was announced, I was like, oh, what the hell? Everyone was like, oh, what the hell? There's an Andre 3000 record. No.
But not like that.
It's not that. Yeah, but I have found, I think, you know, this new Blue Sun, this jazz record from Andre 3000 and his flute playing buddies, jazzy buddies. There's a lot going on here. It's, I guess you can make the argument that there's thousands of records out there like this. But whether because of his name or because of the discourse around it when it was released in November, I did listen to it and I was really taken with it. I really am, in the same way that Floating Points Pharoah Sanders records really did it for me about 2 years ago, this is that record for me this year. It's like this beautiful, gorgeous jazz record. He's like, I never listened to flutes before, you know. And like, you talk about people like the people that are involved in this, Carlos Nino, who makes a lot of records, and a lot of these like very seasoned players, of course, who are involved in this. This is essentially an ambient jazz album, and it's really wonderful. And it's really done a lot for me in the last 6 weeks or so since I heard it. So let's take a bit of this opening track, this 12-minute song, which I'm going to try and recount the title of, but it's too long to actually even read on the screen. I swear I really wanted to make a rap album, but this is literally the way the wind blew me this time. So here is a bit of that song. Thank you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Yeah, so New Blue Sun by Andre 3000. It is obviously a weird record to include. And yes, his connection and his playing on this album has led me to pick an ambient jazz album as one of my albums of the year, because I just found a lot from it. I've never really got into stuff like this too much, and sometimes you do need a way into things like this. Mm. And it's, I've just found it really, really meditative and nice. And to be honest, there is a slight personal connection, because like, we did have this album on when my partner was in labor as well.
Oh, wow.
So there was elements of that as well. It was very chill. It was, sometimes you need that kind of stuff. Mm. So there is that in the back of my mind as well, that, you know, it did soundtrack as something quite special as well. And
that's lovely.
And it really helped. And but I also have been playing it a lot in November, because we didn't do Best in November this last month because time. But yeah, really, really enjoyed it. Andre 3000. I loved all the interviews and stuff that he did. I loved listening to him talk. I could listen to him talk about music and his life as well. But there are no voices on this record, and he does it with his many flutes, digital flutes and otherwise. And I think, yeah, go and listen to some of the chats he had. There's some interviews on YouTube and NPR as well, which I think are really great and really give a lovely background. And he just seems like such a nice guy.
He does.
A lovely man who is trying to just make his way in the world of music while ignoring the, or staying away from the fame circle that he was briefly in when he was in Outkast. And I just think he's a great dude, and he should be celebrated. And this album is so lovely. And yeah, it's easy to be like, oh my God, the Andre 3000 jazz album. Oh, I can't believe you picked that. But like, it's good. I really liked it. So
I'm a really big defender of artists who just decide like, oh, I just want to hop into a different genre for a bit. I really don't think
like,
that you need to have the same sound for your whole career at all. Like, I think it's
not
just
quite the same level, but that little Yachty album from earlier this year was a big surprise for me.
Yeah.
And again, it that arrived at the right time as well. That was early January. It was a quiet time, essentially the rapper Lil Yachty making a psych rock album in the style of Tame Impala and Pink Floyd. And it worked for me, even though, you know, a lot of people think it doesn't. And I'm like, that's fine.
But I think it's very easy
to
forget.
It's just interesting.
It's very easy to forget that, like, artists are musicians, and they don't only want to make the kind of music that they are selling for their whole careers. Like, and if you've had a career as long as Andre 3000, you know, he's obviously a man of like various tastes when it comes to his own listening, but also when it comes to his own like composing and his interests in music. And it's really easy to forget that, like, artists are well-rounded music listeners and music appreciators, as well as just being who we hear on their records. So I think it's really nice when we hear people branch out a bit and do something a bit different that really doesn't feel like a calculated like career move, where it's just like, oh, I'm just going to do something a bit more esoteric. I'm just going to do something that reflects what I'm passionate about right now. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, part of my oeuvre. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, a point in my legacy. It can just be something that I'm passionate about doing right now. So I'm good on him for doing that.
Follow your ears.
Follow your ears.
Good.
That's it. Okay. Another second record for me this year. CMAT's record, the follow-up to her debut.
No, you didn't.
I
you
did.
Didn't pick CMAT.
I did.
Oh my God.
Of course I did.
What a surprise.
Follow-up to If My Wife Knew I'd Be Dead. This is an album that explores the breakdown of a relationship from different perspectives at different times. And I've chosen the song Rent to have a little listen to.
Slice my hope in two and put it on ice. Put it on ice. Your bed and cartoons could have been my life. I found lashes on the DVD case. You said they were mine, said they were mine. Never my style, but I didn't want to get on your wrong side. Whatever they want. It's like I'm paying all this rent I can't afford for two. And now, baby, the rent is due. And I don't know anything about you. It's like I'm paying all this rent I can't afford.
So I was talking to you before about going to see CMAT in the Olympia, one of her four nights that she did in the Olympia, and wondering whether some of these songs would hit differently having seen them live. And that was definitely the case, like I expected. I think especially Where Are Your Kids Tonight really hit for me live. And she's been, you know, she's been very, very busy. Four nights in the Olympia Theatre, Jules Holland set, Graham Norton, other voices. Like she's been making the rounds. And I think this album is, It's a really great follow up. Like, unlike Olivia Rodrigo, like, there is a lot of change here. There is a kind of a maturity that you can chart. There's maybe a bit more focus on what the album is actually doing from start to finish and the story that it's telling than there was in the debut. I think she made all the right decisions in terms of the releases of the singles. You know, I think Where Are Your Kids Tonight was a great introduction. I think Rent as a sort of a beloved, you know, live song that's been floating around in her set list, you know, as though she's been around for like 20 years and like she's Radiohead and there's a song that's been floating around the set list. But I mean, already there is a sort of a mythology around CMAT, and Rent is definitely one of those songs. So, I mean, yeah, it's definitely more mature, but it's just as exciting. And I think some of these tracks are, for me, up there with some of my favorites from the first album, which is saying a lot because I really love that first album. So
yeah, I think the thematic strength of the album really ties it together in terms of, you know, it's an album about a relationship from the past that, you know, it's like looking back and recounting all the things that were maybe a bit more obvious now that are wrong. But then, like, in that song especially, but also these songs are just full of absolutely killer choruses and lines. I think, like, California has been in my head for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks.
Fabulous.
Weeks. Just that ending. That
I wonder, California, will this be something that she does now, choir-ish, where she opens her record with a location? Because we had obviously Nashville on the first record, California on the second record. I wonder, will this be like something that she continues throughout the rest of her career? I hope so. Yeah. I think it's,
I hope so.
Nice.
Yeah. I hope so. I think it'll be a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really lovely and a great record. And I think once one of those records that, you know, had my end of year list being maybe a bit in a month's time, it would be probably it would be up there maybe in the top five perhaps. Mm. But as it is, that's just the way it is in my list, probably a little bit outside the top 10 currently. But again, an album I listen to a lot in the house and is increasingly, like, it's my partner Katie's favorite album, probably. So, like,
it was playing last night before you arrived in The Big Romance, actually, when I was in there waiting for you. It was really nice to, like, look around and see people kind of like singing along to it. And yeah, it's just like, it's, oh, come on, like an Irish pop star. Like, how long has it been? Like,
since you're able to walk into a bar and see people singing along to the album tracks, you know, of an Irish pop album. Like it hasn't happened in so long that you can't help but feel so excited.
And that was and the a feeling, woman as well.
Yeah,
I think
an Irish woman,
important.
And it's just,
you know,
like,
we have a great history of that, but same.
Yeah, I mean, we have our picture thises and our scripts and everything. And but like, I mean, with CMAT, like, you know, at the show as well, I saw her on the Thursday night, and you hear people talking around you, you know, during the set, or, you know, while she's chatting. And like, and we were talking a bit about it last night, you and I and a couple of others at the event. And just like, she is a star. Like, there's no two ways about it. Like, she is going to be huge. It's just a matter of when she's going to break through, like, kind of properly. But like, she has everything. There's nothing, she hasn't put a foot wrong so far in her career either. Yeah, she's so on the up that you're sort of watching it in awe. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's great. Yeah. And we're all just so proud of her. we really claim her as our own, you know.
Well, she is our own.
She's ours.
there's no question of her provenance, thankfully.
Yes.
Okay. A lot of good rap albums this year. I want to shout out H31R, which is an album that came out on, I think, Ninja Tune recently, called Headspace. Really good. The Billy Woods and Kenny Segal Maps album has been doing quite well critically, as well as on our place like our Discord. The Earl Sweatshirt Alchemist album. Alchemist was very popular this year, very prolific. He did an album called War Deer with Earl Sweatshirt that I really liked, which was initially released on a kind of NFT platform thing, but wasn't gatekeeped, so that was nice. And then the one I probably liked, ended up liking a bit more, was Mike Wiki and Alchemist, Fate is a Rock. Very much like a beat, almost beat free, kind of weird little rap record. And then JPEG Mafia and Danny Brown, Scaring the Holes, for the big bombastic, vibey, industrial, booming rap album. I also, on an Irish context, I loved Kojak's album as well, Phantom of the Afters. He continues to just prove himself as a really great rapper and a great storyteller, and kind of encapsulating being the Irish in London and does that really well. But the album I'm going to pick in terms of rap music this year for this podcast is No Name's album. It is called Sundial. First album in 5 years from her, the Chicago rapper. A lot of, you know, it was questioned about if she would even release more music. But in the end, what she's really done is come back and as a better rapper, a person with more lyrical precision, is talking about, you know, the kind of things that you'd hope she was talking about. Because she talks a lot of shit on Twitter, basically. And she's doing more of that with nuance in her lyrics now. Like, the one that people talk about, which I'm going to play now, is Namesake, which is, you know, talking about artists playing the NFL and Super Bowl and stuff like that, and how the NFL has ties to the US military, but she's also not afraid to criticize herself, because she said she'd never play Coachella because it was a predominantly white audience, but then did, because, you know, artists need the money, and she decided to do it. And, you know, she kind of addresses that as well. I think musically there's a lot going on here. Let's play a bit of Namesake here and come back.
I don't want to see death no more. Let's fight. They got the devil hiding in plain sight. That's you, that's me. The whole world is culpable. Why complacency float the boat the most? I don't really get it. Y'all ain't really with it. All that eat the rich, tax the rich. Y'all ain't really about that shit. Bitch, if you want some money, you can say that. You deserve a payback. These niggas took everything. Let's go get that and take it to the hood, though. Share it with community. We soldiers in plain clothes. Everybody got their role. Don't be a op. Everybody got their role. I'ma play mine like Scooby-Doo in a haunted house. I see the ghosts that they talking about. I see the signs. Read in between the line at the crime scene. I ain't fucking with the NFL or Jay-Z. Propaganda for the military complex. The same gun that shot Lil Terry out west. The same gun that shot Samir in the West Bank. We all think the Super Bowl is the best thing.
Go Rihanna, go. Watch the fighter jet fly high. War machine gets glamorized. We play the game, do pass the time. Go Beyonce, go. Watch the fighter jet fly high. War machine gets glamorized. We play the game, do pass the time. Go Kendrick, go. Watch the fighter jet fly high. Machine gets glamorized. We play the game. You pass the dime. Go, no name, go. Coachella stage got sanitized. I said I wouldn't perform for them, and somehow I still fell in line. Fuck, I never need no name. I got a little bit of love in the memory lane. Picture me rolling up the blood.
So, yeah, I just really like that she's kind of turning it on herself as well. And musically, there's a lovely jazzy live hip hop band stuff going on here. Reminds me of Salt. A lot of it, it does. Kind of has very insistent and has a lovely presence to it. A lot of live arrangements and stuff. So I really like it. I think she's a little bit less laid back than she was. And she's always been a really good rapper in her own way. But I think there's more intent. There's more talk about what's going on in the world and inequality, especially, and maybe double standards, and talking about, like, there's a line, can't remember what's, hold me down. It's like, we is Wakanda, we queen Rwanda, first black president. And he's the one who bombed us. So it's like, really, you don't hear a lot of these kind of rap lyrics or lyrics in general about what's going on, especially in American politics and the double standards at play. I think we see that now in what's happening in the atrocities in Gaza at the moment, the genocide, which is being supported by America. And it's so plain to see the double standards at play there and the communications and what people are saying and what is actually happening. And I think you want to hear more of that in music this year when it's so much of that happening. And No Name Sundial goes some way to doing that. There is guests include Jay Electronica, Billy Woods, Common, and there are likes of Chicago artists like Slim Wave and Saba who are involved as well in terms of production. But it works really well as an album. It's quite cohesive, and she's a great record. She's a great maker of records, and Sundial is no different.
Great. Okay, next person. Look, we're all probably Sufjan Doubt, nearly. I mean, I'll never be Sufjan Doubt. I'm not going to spend too much time on this record. One of my favorite albums of the year was Javelin by Sufjan. We both reviewed it in the end of the month. We had an entire episode about Sufjan Stevens. We had an event last night about Sufjan Stevens. So why don't we just listen to Shit Talk? Maybe jump in around like 3:10-ish and we'll just enjoy this and then we'll move on.
Closely, hold me tightly, lest I fall. Hold me closely, hold me tightly, lest I fall.
Hold me closely.
And look, maybe I'm being a bit avoidant because talking about this album makes me sad. But but yeah, I mean, we spoke a bit at the event last night about Sufjan as an arranger of music. And I think that this album has just so many really, really stunning moments of arrangement, of vocal arrangement in particular. It's very choral. It's very, it feels very church-like at times, very hymnal. And it's, it's a deeply personal record to him. Like, he did not need to make this. We didn't deserve it. And here it is. And it just feels like such an amazing way to kind of round out the year. You know, I think this is the latest album, like the most recent album, rather, that on my list, certainly. I haven't had that much time with it, but it's just so obviously one of my favorites from the first time I listened to it. It was the one that really hit me the most. So yeah, Javelin by Sufjan Stevens, one of the best albums of the year. No contest. Easy.
Yeah, and we have a whole album or a whole podcast in which you can listen to us talk about Sufjan. And so you can go and do that in the last few weeks for sure. All right, my next record is a selection from a singer-songwriter from Chicago called Kara Jackson, who I saw earlier this year former National Youth Poet Laureate. Debut album in full is called Why Does the Earth Give Us People to Love. I love this record. It's so great. There's so much going on here. I'm going to play a bit of a song called Rat, just to give you some idea of the kind of cadence and vibe of Kara Jackson.
Rat was batshit and barely played a lick. He took to the highway high off headiness. He and his woman saw through an awful split. The road is only hope of falsifying it. Come on, come on, come on down. Come on, come on down. The wheels will turn you weary around. California calls and buys collars.
So yeah, Kara Jackson is a really lovely, interesting singer-songwriter. She's young, she's early 20s, a very lyrical album, mostly songs of kind of bluesy folk. Largely acoustic with some adornments there, as you can hear. A very unconventional slant in terms of how she sings and how she, her song structures. Like the album does avoid regular structures in favor of like repeating phrases and patterns. And it kind of challenges us in that way. Some of those songs really are you don't know where they're going. There's one song in particular, which is probably the standout on it, called Dickhead Blues. And I'll play a bit of it just to give you a bit more of a flavor, because I think it's just goes in different directions and you're like, where's this song going? What's happening here?
Like a soda straw strangling you. Thinking Cupid calls for you. End up gum on someone's shoe. Makes me feel like I don't have a clue. If I had a heart, 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 I know where to start, I know where to start, I know where to start, I know where to start.
So yeah, just a really, really interesting confounding record as well. Largely, Why Does the Art Give Us People to Love, a album title inspired by the grief of a passing of her friend and the existential questions that posed in the wake of that, including things like, why do we show up in this world alongside one another, to love and to mourn, to curse each other out, to die working every day? I don't know, I'm still figuring it out. That's her words. But there's a very refreshing style to what's going on. I think because she comes from a poetry background, there's not that many predictable song patterns in it here, and it's a much better record for it. And as one of the songs says, I am pretty top-notch. I think this is a top-notch record. It's a really, really beautiful, maybe slightly underappreciated record. She played in the Workman's Cellar earlier this year. It was so beautiful, and she's such a great songwriter. And I look forward to hearing more from this artist, Kara Jackson, who hopefully will get more opportunities to tour the world again. So yeah, Kara Jackson.
Yeah, I haven't listened to that album, but it sounds like it's right up my street, so I will. My next album is from Mitski. The land is inhospitable and so are we. And I've chosen the song I'm Your Man.
You believe me like a god. I destroy you. I deserve it.
So I think with this album, Mitski, I mean, I wouldn't say it's like a return to form, but it's a new direction, I think, for her. The Land is Inhospitable is a very focused album, I would say. It plays with kind of atmosphere, but contains mostly very, very straightforward songwriting. My Love Is Mine All Mine, the kind of the breakout song from the album, sounds like a standard to me. It sounds like it's always existed. Bug Like an Angel, unexpectedly frightening. And I think I'm Your Man that we just listened to there has like more than a hint of PJ Harvey about it as well. So there are different influences kind of being tied together here, but the atmosphere is very much Mitski. It's not her flashiest album, but I think much like Lana Del Rey, there's a lot of work being put into sounding this effortless, you know, so effortlessly atmospheric. And yeah, I love this Mitski. I think this really hit for me this year. I was really happy to hear her, you know, kind of move a little bit away from the more like experimental stuff and just focus on the songwriting again. And I really like it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of this I liked a lot more than her previous work, for sure. I think her strength is her songwriting, and I think while some of it's very much more kind of less challenging, it's still, there's great songwriting here, so that's all that really matters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, one for both of us now before we cede the floor to yourself. One of my favorite albums, probably my favorite album of the year, is this one. Okay. It's Lancome's False Lancome. I don't know what happened here. It's just being one of those, again, they've done it again. The fourth album picks up the darker threads of their previous work and continues to needle and knead the dough of this dark, almost black metal drone kind of trad music that they are so, so good at, in the way that the Wild Rover on the last album was this big, gargantuan tune. They have here, in a similarly epic fashion, Go Dig My Grave, which is a deep swelling song, really beautiful, grief-stricken, hard song led by Rady Pete.
It's their driver's license, for sure.
But I think what is noticeable about this record is there's a couple of different voices on this other than the brilliant voice of Rady Pete. There are some great vocals for the first time from Cormac McDiarmid, and on a song called Lord of Bore and Mary Flint. And I think, like, if I really thought about it, and I have been a lot, I think Lord of Bore and Mary Flint might be my favorite song on the album.
It's my favorite song on the album.
Dig My Grave.
Yeah, it's I'm in full agreement with you. This is my favorite song on False Lancome. Oh, it's magic. Like, it really is magic.
Yeah. I just, something special about it. And I can't remember who, I think it was Anamika in the guest list we do for the website on 909, it talked about this song as something hypnotic about it, and there's something special, and it really makes me feel good. And yeah, it's just beautiful. Let's play a bit of this song, Lord of Bore and Mary Flynn.
Are you poison me full sword? It is so, 'tis so, she said to him. You'll see Mary. Thank you.
it's one of my favorites of the year as well, for sure. I was glad when I saw it on your list. Give you the task of talking about it, because I actually find it hard to like put into words what I love about it, but I do. Okay, my final choice from albums of this year, probably come as no surprise. Again, I'm very predictable. Boy Genius, Julian Baker, Phoebe Bridgers, Lucy Dacus. The first album that we've had from them. We've had the EPs in the past, but this is, you know, this is the album that cemented them as a band. It launched 1,000 fangirls. It launched an entire community on TikTok. It launched discourse around, you know, fan behavior at gigs, fan behavior out of gigs. You know, it's been a big year for these three women. Here's Satanist. Obviously, I mean, these are three of the best songwriters in their genres of their generation. When they came together for that first EP, it really felt like it was this kind of flash in the pan moment. Like we might not actually get an album, but then we got an album and it was as good as it is. And, you know, this was a really, really big talking point this year. This was, you know, if we're going to think back to 2023 in terms of like big musical moments that don't involve Taylor Swift, I think the Boy Genius record will be one of those big moments. They seem to cross over from, you know, their initial fan base into something greater, you know. And I think the album is excellent. It is difficult to have three distinct songwriters and distinct vocalists on an album, you know, each taking different songs, each exploring different sounds. Like Satanist is a very different song to Cool About It, which is a very different song to Emily, I'm Sorry. But the three of them together, there's just this kind of magic when they get in a room together. You can tell they are, you know, such close friends. They love each other so much. They explore that love and friendship on the lyrics on the record as well. And they've really cemented themselves as like a band to take seriously. They're not a super group anymore. They're a band, and kind of this is who they are. So yeah, this has been an album.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like they're going back to their solo work anytime soon, but they probably will. But like it does feel like this isn't just the one and done, like the Better Living Community Center record. This is friends for life stuff.
I wouldn't imagine so. I mean, even you know, from a kind of a cynical business point of view, like they have mobilized a fan base, like a very, very dedicated fan base who are willing to spend money on their shows and buy merch and support them online and all of these things. And not all of those things are cynical, of course, you know, but they have a fandom actually around them. So if I were them, I'd try to make that last as long as I can, you know. Yeah, I hope it doesn't mean that we don't get. I mean, they're very prolific songwriters, though. They do seem to be constantly writing music, kind of individually and together. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we got a Phoebe record next year. maybe late next year, but I'm not sure about the other two. I don't follow their kind of release schedules as much as I do with Phoebe, but yeah, it was a big musical moment this year. You know, it didn't really matter what genre of music you were into, you were talking about this record one way or another, so I had to include it for that. And it's an excellent record. It's got excellent songs on it. I've listened to it a lot this year, an awful lot. So yeah, that's Boy Genius with The Record.
Great. Probably the biggest single record in our sphere this year as well, in terms of its reach. And,
I think the only band that could have taken the place that this album has kind of occupied would be if Big Thief released a record. Do you know what I mean? It infiltrates the same spheres of fan and influence. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, big record.
Yeah, and I witnessed that firsthand, what you're saying about, you know, the fan culture and the fan base and the respectful nature of it, and seeing a massive gig outdoors in Royal Hospital Command in Emma in Dublin, and hearing a pin drop when they're playing the Quiet Songs is like, oh wow, this is not something I've ever experienced before. There was nobody whooping and hollering. There was no one. People were fainting. there was mass faintings. It was like there was a lot of people who'd been clearly there all day. There was fanatics there.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, it's rare really, and especially with this kind of music,
yeah,
to see that. And people that being themselves, and you know, I just think their camaraderie and friendship is something that it seems really genuine.
It's something very special.
You can really, it's lovely. It's lovely. It's nice when people find each other in that way and then do something great with it, like Run the Jewels or somebody like that, you know, where the greater than the sum of their parts, but that you can always identify what's going on separately, or how they what parts they're worked on together, and who's bringing the major influence there here. So yeah, I love it. I think it's great. Boy Genius are that kind of example as well. So that is 12 albums I think we picked in the end on this podcast special for end of year. Next week is our final one of the year before we take a January break. It is our annual 909 podcast awards, and that can be any old topic, any old award can be titled and given as appropriate. There's a few we'll try and consider. What will be the best sax solo
will be the best sax
of 2023? Favorite lyric, whatever, we'll figure it out. We're going to figure it out for next week.
We've got a week.
We've got a week. But that will be our final one of the year. And for myself, I'm looking forward to just spending time with the family here. And I have Luma Club on Saturday with Kellyanne Byrne and the Luma Boys. And then New Year's Eve, two things I'm doing. I'm playing the New Year's Festival in Collins Barracks early that night before midnight, and then also helping run the Circular in Rialto, kind of my local pub. That'll be the nice New Year's Eve free in buzz for people who live nearby. It's particularly nice, like myself, ringing in the new year there at the Circular with Graham Dolan and Alex Donald. So that'll be great crack. And then I hope to do very little other than that.
raise a child for then. Yeah. I think will be
fun times.
Yeah,
stay in the bubble. And what about yourself,
Andrea? For fans of me, I am we're recording.
Which there are many.
We're recording Juvenalia Christmas special next week. So very much looking forward to that. For the people who cross over between those two podcasts, and we're recording a started finish this evening for the Patreon people. And other than that, I'm not doing any end of year, any other end of year stuff. You're my only end of year this year. I'm not doing arena. I'm not doing books rounds up, anything like that, just because I don't have time this year. And I ended last year with quite a severe burnout, and I have made the decision to not do that this year. So you won't actually see a lot of me around, as you might usually expect.
Maybe you could share some nice tips for books you've read this year next week. Maybe
absolutely will. Yeah, we'll definitely talk about books and films and television next year, 100%, or next week rather, next episode. So yeah, we'll see you all then. Thanks for coming last night, the people who came last night, and the rest of you, hopefully see you in January. But we'll be back next week for the podcast awards. If you have an idea for an award and who to give it to, podcast@909.com, you can email us if you'd like to send us a little message for the end of the year.
For sure. Podcast at 909. Always appreciated. Always nice to hear from people. We might even read it out.
Or Ray DM
Darcy,
us.
The Dan situation.
Yeah, DM us on Instagram. Send us a little message.
Yeah. Or Discord if you're on there as well.
Yes.
Always appreciated. All right. That's it from us this week. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Andrea. Thanks Georgia, for editing
the
podcast.
Georgia. Thanks. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.